live, dude?
I don't mean the street.
I am in Chicago.
Generically. And are you, is that where you're from?
Yeah, I was born in the suburbs, and I've been living in the city for the last couple of years.
I want to start off by saying that I met you briefly, as I mentioned in an email, in Macon, Georgia, in this tiny show a few years ago, and give you a quick background. So I'm 49 years old, which makes me perfect age for the heyday of the 80s wrestling boom. I watched WrestleMania 3. I paid to go to a pay-per-view at the Fox, like we all watched it, okay?
Yeah.
So I'm that age, right? And then, like a lot of people, I lose wrestling in my life. 20 years of my life goes by, and I lose it. So I pretty much missed the entire Attitude Era. My sons are born, right? I become friends with Charles Robinson on the obstacle racing scene, which is my full-time job. We start watching it. We start going to shows, and I'm instantly brought back in. Everything I love about it, right? But here's where it goes up a notch for me. We go to this show, because I'd been to a couple shows in Atlanta at the State Farm Arena or whatever, but we go to the blah blah place in Macon, tiny, far from full, and all of you guys came out and delivered like it was 20,000 people. And I was so impressed and so I dare people to try to shit on wrestling to me because I will fucking kill them. because I've seen how hard you all work, the physical aspects. But specifically, you got up and jumped out and are belting out a song if there's 20,000 there. And I want to ask you how difficult that is, how hard it is. It's why we all thought the Thunderdome wasn't going to work, right? Because the crowd wasn't there. So how hard is it? I want to specifically talk about singing before we get into actual wrestling. How difficult was it for you to jump on ropes and sing some ridiculous song to essentially nobody?
So honestly, I'll tell you this. Two things. One, coming from the start of the FCW era and everything that I started, and coming from theater, small theater, small Chicago college black box theater, I performed in front of two people before.
Okay.
This is no problem. And so while I'm at those shows, I very specifically remember that because I've only been to Macon, I think, the one time. So I actually do remember that show. And so that was a string of house shows during that time. They were very much not full. But that being said, you're in a 10,000-15,000 seat building. But still, if there's 1,000 or 2,000 people, it's not a great house considering the building and considering, some of the people on the show. I know, but it's still, for a kid who grew up, again, performing for 5 or even an FCW, I performed for 8 people under a WWE contract.
Wow.
In Florida, 8 people were in the crowd for one of our small FCW Florida shows when I was early on in developmental. So right. Yeah, even though it's a small for a big WWE show, 1,500, 2,000 people, I'm still jazzed for that. So I will get up and do anything. That kind of stuff comes second nature.
Yeah, and it was a great show. I remember Charlotte came out and did her thing. And again, as if she's performing in front of so many more, which is why who she is. So being from Chicago, so I lived in LA for a bit and I was in the comedy world. Did you roll with Second City or IO or any of those guys?
So, I did theater school, straight up studied in college theater, have my bachelor's in theater from Columbia College, Chicago. I was never a big IO, Second City guy. I loved it. I went to the shows. I know a lot of people. One of the theater chair who he has since passed on, the chair of the theater department at Columbia, where I went to school, was Sheldon Patinkin, who was one of the founders of Second City, and his brother, Mandy Patinkin, is his brother.
Okay.
So,
how does he relate to Del Close?
Friends, I think there's a connection there for sure. He was one of those early founders of OG Second City, and so that my school had a large connection there. I had teachers who had performed and taught there and were part of the ensemble and everything like that. Not ultimately my thing. I had friends who were so much better at the improv scene and the comedy scene than me, but I loved it so much.
And then can I ask you what your earliest wrestling memories are?
Earliest wrestling memories. So I'm trying to think. I didn't have cable TV as a kid, so I didn't have TNT, USA Network, stuff like that. And I, you know, I'm born in 87, so I'm coming up early 90s. My brothers watch. I remember my dad took my brothers to the Rosemont Horizon to see it in like 94. And I remember my earliest memories are like Attitude Era wrestling. Cause I would scramble. Everybody was talking about it at school. I'm coming of age. I'm 10, 11 years old. Everybody's talking about it. And I'm like, what the hell are they talking about? Like, this sounds like the coolest thing in the world, but I don't have cable. I don't know what's going on. And I find it finally, in Chicago, there's this like local channel, WCIU, which used to show Shotgun Saturday Night, which was like, for those that don't remember, is kind of like a, there's really no equivalent today. It's kind of wild. It was basically a recap show for Monday Night Raw. And then they would have one or two like small matches that they clearly taped before, you know, Taka Michinoku versus Al Snow, some kind of lower mid card guys would have matches. And then they would basically just recap Raw. And so that's where I finally got my fix. And then, SmackDown started happening on UPN, which was network TV. So I saw it and then I got cable and everything. And then I was just like deep down the rabbit hole. But some of those early Shotgun Saturday nights are kind of my first like hardcore dive in to like watching wrestling full time.
So when you're doing the theater thing, were you back then like the fit theater dude? Were you like in the gym back then or no?
So when,
because the drama kids weren't usually in the gym. Let's be honest.
So I always talk about I went in high school. I was kind of, I'm not going to say an outcast. I had a lot of friends, but like I played, you know, in a band. I was kind of like the artsy. And then I did theater in my senior year, which is what turned me on to acting. So I was in kind of that artsy fartsy crowd, kind of a niche. And I always say this, I'm like, I went from being kind of the awkward artsy kid in high school to now I'm kind of a jock in my artsy college class.
Right.
Because just like you said, a lot of those, you know, students, they're not super into the gym. I'm not saying everybody was out of shape, but like I was trying to straight up like bodybuild and like put on mass and like all this stuff when I was in college doing theater. So yeah, I was kind of that person in the class.
And when did things go from, this might actually be for me. Like I might be able to take a stab at this like wrestling thing.
At day one. I mean, this was not an option for me. It was one of those things. It was going to happen. I didn't know how, I didn't know when, I didn't know where, but it was going to happen. It was something I felt in my bones. And from the days messing around on my trampoline with my best friend and stuff like that, it was just like, I had this, I'm like, I get this art form. I get this athletic form. I'm like, it just makes sense. The idea, I could never shoot a basketball. I could, you know, never hit even off a tee. I could never hit the baseball. Like, I'm not one of those sports guys, but I'm like, I can jump around. I know how to control my body. And I'm like, I love performing, even though I'm shy. I'm like, this is combining everything I like about both athleticism and entertaining. I'm like, it's just, I don't know how or where or when, but it's going to happen. So even from the earliest days, I had, you know, my mind dead set on like, this is going to happen for me one way or another.
And so what was like literal step one for you? What email or place did you show up to? Because this is not the era of today where you hop on the internet and there is a slew of information in front of you.
Yeah, 100%. So, I mean, first was going to college, which I did for acting, because mom and dad said, I don't care what, I wanted to go after high school, right? I wanted to go right to go start suplexing people after high school. But mom and dad, thank God, they're just like, please go to college, get a piece of paper that says you went somewhere for 4 years. So just, we believe in you, but just in case. And so of course I got the most useful degree possible, theater, and went on from there. But no, so deciding to do it, I knew, so FCW was the developmental territory at the time. And so I was on their website all the time, just looking at the talent that would be coming in, you know, I would, from just seeing if I recognized any names, comparing like, I feel like I'm, I'm maybe about that guy's size. They say he's 6'2", I'm 6'3", all that goofy stuff. And then they had a recruiting portal for tryouts and stuff like that. But I noticed a little thing said beginner's class. And I was like, oh, I'm like, well, I don't have any training yet. And around me in Chicago at the time, there was not really any high quality training. And so I'm like, you know what? I'm like, if they're offering like straight up 101 training, I may as well go get training from the people who are coaching the future WWE people. Right. I'm like, I may as well learn how they do it if that's where I want to end up. So I worked and I saved a little bit of money and I rented a room off of Craigslist in a stranger's house and signed up for the beginner's class, which started January 2011, and flew down there.
Florida, this is.
Yep, this is Tampa, Florida, and flew down, lived in a stranger's home, and worked at a gym for three and a half months while I trained under Norman Smiley and Mike Graham and Steve Kern.
And did you feel positive reinforcement right away? Did you feel like, okay, I'm getting somewhere? Was it frustrating? Like, how were those earliest days for you?
It reinforced what I had believed since, you know, I was younger as a kid. It solidified. I was like, I got in the ring and started taking bumps again, all this goofy stuff. I played with my friends and I'm like, I was right. I feel like, and I'm not advocating anybody messing around with it outside of a professional environment, of course, but it was this thing. It was like, okay, I kind of had this right. Bumping came naturally, hitting the ropes, like picking people up for suplex, all these things that I'm like, that I thought I kind of understood. It was a weird serendipitous thing where it was like, okay, yeah, I do kind of understand it. I was pretty close. And Norman, I had a great relationship with Norman Smiley. He is one of the kindest, you know, just coolest, even keeled and like smartest people in pro wrestling. I owe him so much. He never lets me give him credit for anything, but he is the reason I also have the job, got contracted and everything like that, even though he claims it's not. But yeah, like from Jump Street, it all felt very, very natural.
How many people come in and kind of get spit out? Like I assume they have to have some sort of vetting just to even let you in the building, right? They can't let every quote unquote crazy person walk in the door, right?
You talk about for the beginner's class or for getting a contract?
No. Like the beginner's class, the performance center, all that stuff. Just like showing up and like getting in literally in the door.
So, I mean, performance center, totally different thing. They don't offer any kind of training or anything like that. Now, that's a total.
I
kind of
thought that's what that was like in the early days. Yeah.
So this is way before the performance center. I mean, this is years before that. This is still FCW Tampa. It's a little warehouse on Southdale Mabry Avenue. It's now a children's playground. But yeah, that back then it was kind of an island unto itself. And Steve Kern, who was the guy who ran it. And so like, it was very, WWE was kind of half hands off down there. It's like they knew who was down there. They were keeping an eye on the people they wanted to keep an eye on, but it was kind of an independent, like a Florida champion. It was like its own thing. And so Steve ran his own class on the side. It was kind of his own deal. It wasn't affiliated with WWE. And it was just in the evenings after they were all done with their talent and their training for the day for FCW and everything. So it was just kind of on the side. But yeah, nowadays, if you want to get to that performance center, you better have something booked or a meeting or a pass or something. It's much, much more corporate, much more secure.
And you said 3 months. What happened at the end of 3 months?
I went and came back home.
And then
you know, I wrestled here on, you know, on a couple of small independents. I tried to get my footing in the door at a couple of independents here, but I got really, really lucky. Again, Norman Smiley called me about 6 months later in the fall of 2011 and is like, hey, people from TR were asking me if I had come across any new talent. They were looking to add people. And if there was anybody that I thought, he goes, and I put your name out. I think you have a lot of potential. He goes, I can't promise you anything. They just asked and I said your name. So he goes, just be on the lookout. And I was like, oh my God, thank you, blah, blah, blah. And so again, he says he didn't do anything, but literally like a week later, I get an email from talent relations asking what I've been up to, what I'm doing. I send him some stuff. I hear nothing for a little while. And then sure enough, I get a phone call from John Laurinaitis, Big Johnny Ace. And literally barely even saying hello, but just being like, hey, what's going on? Here's the deal. We're going to offer you this contract. You're going to go to Florida. You're going to do this X, Y, Z. Talk to my secretary. Click.
Wow.
And that off we run.
Were you Aiden right away? Or were you somebody before that?
So I was like nobody before that. I was just down there training. And no, then
I meant, when did you decide?
So the actual name thing is just, man, it was, give us names. All right. I gave them like 30 names. They rejected all of them. And, they came back with a list of 10, and Aiden English was one of them. And I had it in my head that I wanted to do the artiste, the drama king, the theater character, whatever. I didn't have it fully fleshed out yet, but I knew I wanted to do this kind of highfalutin, pompous, artistic character. So I'm like, you know what? Aiden English sounds like a douchebag.
Absolutely. It is like the douchiest name. I'm glad you agree.
Yes. And so I was like, you know what? I'm like, that'll work. If that's already on their approved list, I'll take it.
And that was it. And then how soon did they do the vaudevillians thing? How soon did they put that together?
Years later. Because that was 2012 when I started with FCW. We didn't do the vaudevillians until we moved to the PC, which was like a year and a half later. I had it run just as kind of the drama king Aiden English on NXT, did the big singing contest with Big Cass, Colin Cassidy, and did a couple of solo stuff. And then it wasn't until, was it late 2013, early 2014 or something, that the vaudevillians really started to kind of form?
I mean, this is all still like a relatively short time when you think how long it takes someone to quote unquote break out or make it, you know what I mean? Or get even to get that level. It's all pretty recent. I mean, like I said, I didn't start watching again even until 16, 17 with my kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
it was the thing I remember, because I was starting to watch it, is that it was, now I can't think of their name. It was, oh my God, this is what happens when you become later 40s. By the way, do you like Matt or Matthew? Or?
So I mean, in regular everyday life, Matt, my name for wrestling going forward, I'm using my real name, but I'm using the full Matthew Raywalt, as seen on Impact Wrestling lately.
Got it. Okay. Because I'm also Matthew, but nobody calls me Matthew except my mom.
Right. Same here. But that's why it works for my wrestling.
Right. So, I'm so embarrassed. I don't even want to like give the hints of who it is because I'm so embarrassed.
I was like, give me some context. I can probably figure it out.
But I know you will. But I'm so embarrassed that I can't think. It's freaking Big E. What is the name of that fucking?
The New Day.
The New Day. It was New Day versus the Usos every week in, week out for the year that I started watching it. That's how I remember. So what was that? 17, 2017?
Probably maybe 2016, 2017. Yeah.
But I remember thinking, because remember, this is my first time sort of back. And I remember thinking, is this what it was like when I was a kid? Did they have the same people? Did they drag these on as long as they did? I remember thinking they were dragging on. And by the way, two awesome tag teams, like five amazing wrestlers, like they all have great personality. But I was just like, come on, like I have to move on from the storyline.
Yeah, it was. It depends. It depends on the talent. Depends on the story and stuff like that. Yeah, it does feel. It felt like things when you look back on it, like things like the Attitude Era and all that stuff. Like were. It felt like this big pyramid. I'm like, the whole thing was probably like a year or two or three. And like they went from, stories to stories to stories pretty quick, which I kind of don't like. I appreciate that they do longer term stories now, but it just, you need a little bit more dynamism, I guess, dynamics.
So when I was growing up, we watched these people on television. Maybe we would get to go to a show, but it was very much separate. Okay, there was never going to be any breaking of kayfabe or the fourth wall or anything, right? Now, first it was just social media, and now it's everybody's got a podcast, and everybody's spilling the beans kind of every week. And it doesn't seem to be hurting the ratings, I guess. But my question is, how do you approach it as a performer? Like, how does that work when we're all, like, we all love the access, just like we love having access to LeBron James, right? But LeBron James isn't somebody else on the court. He's still LeBron. So how has that been to navigate as you've kind of come up in this new time?
I'm a performer. You know what I mean? I'm an actor. That's at the end of the day, again, that door to me, people always act like it's so recent or something. I'm like, that door has been open for 20 years. The minute Vince McMahon came on TV and said, we have fictional characters and we're going to give you more interesting storylines in 1999, it's been dead since then in my head. Now, it's been a slow pull, but
What did he say? Was that when he was on Bob Costas and he yelled at Bob Costas?
This was like the dawn of the Attitude Era. That it might have even been like 97, 98. He did like a commercial. It was just like, we've been listening to you fans and we're going to give you more dynamic programming. We're going to give you edgier storylines and more, you know, outrageous characters. And so I'm like, he was just straight up being like, we're writing this stuff for you. But it was like an ad campaign.
Okay.
And so I'm like, you're coming out on your own show, national television, saying that you've pretty much said that pro wrestling is not a shoot sport. So I embrace that. I come from an acting background. It's a show. It's a television show that we're making. When the red light is on, we are 100% invested in our character and who we are. But outside of that, we're human beings. My biggest thing is they always talk to us in wrestling and in WWE about like, look, we're like a Hollywood movie, right? We're looking for different parts to play, different stories and all these things. I'm like, all right, well, if that's true, when Ray Fiennes goes home, he doesn't have to be Voldemort when he's on the subway. You know what I mean?
And he doesn't have to tweet as Voldemort.
No, I don't have to tweet in character and tell you, I'm going to get Harry Potter. Go see him in theaters. No, he gets to be like, hey, I made this awesome movie. I worked with Daniel Radcliffe, who's fantastic, and we put together something really cool. Please watch it. I see no reason why I can't go, hey, I had a fantastic match with Heath Slater. He's such a great guy. It's going to be an incredible show. Watch on Mondays or the pay-per-view. I don't see a difference. A lot of people do. A lot of people are still very purist about it. They want to keep that wall and it makes them more immersed in it, I guess. But to me, we're performers and we do a TV show. And outside the TV show, you're a normal human and you can still talk about the TV show, but you can be a human being outside of your character.
And I'm with you. I think that is the way to do it, or certainly a way to do it. But when Becky tweets, is she ever tweeting as not Becky? You know what I mean?
So is that part of it too, is that I feel like with Hollywood, it seems obvious. Like, yeah, with my example right there, of course, for some reason it's an, of course, well, of course, he's not that guy. And of course, that's not James Bond. And of course, that Vin Diesel isn't there. But with us, there's always this. And because a lot of promotions use Twitter to like build stories. And I don't like doing that. And I will tell any creative team, I'm like, I'm not going to tweet in my character and tell like this person to F off. Like, I'm not going to, because it doesn't make sense. And I don't really like it. But everyone has their own. So some people will. Some people will go back and forth. And I think that's just confusing. But some people will go back and forth between kind of, hey, I'm just being real. Look at my picture of my dog. And then, oh, never mind. I'm this bad guy. I'm going to kill this person on Thursday.
Right.
Okay. For me, I'm just going to be real on social media for the most part. I'll get you excited. Like, hey, badass stuff's going down. You know, this, you know, Thursday on Impact or whatever. Please watch. And it might even be like, hey, you know, me and like, I'm working with Deonna Purrazzo, like we're going to rule Impact. It's going to be awesome, but I'm not going to be like sinisterly tweeting at some other persona right on TV as if like, I'm going to get you. I don't like it.
All right. Well, listen, I have to ask you about the birth of Rusev Day, which I believe that is right. Like I said, right when I started watching a few years ago. And, you know, nowadays, you know, when the WWE has, you know, they know how to sell stuff, right? Like, here's a thing, here's the shirt, as soon as it's said, right? And then off we go. But that was organically created. That was not them, correct? That was you declaring Rusev Day and the way wrestling works. If we buy it, we chant it and it becomes this whole other thing. So can you talk about that a little bit?
I mean, yeah. So it's weird because it does, I guess, in the primordial sense, it did kind of come from them but it wasn't meant to be anything. It was one skit when right after I did the thing where I interfered on accident to help Rusev beat Randy Orton. And then we did this celebration where Rusev was putting himself over and like getting the key to the city, you know, in Bulgaria. And I was singing and all this stuff. And they were going to declare it Rusev Day. And I think that literally that was supposed to be it. Like, boom, Randy Orton comes out, RKOs everybody. Ha ha ha. Happy Rusev Day. on to the next, right?
Right.
But then the next town, people started going, happy Rusev Day. And then the next town was Rusev Day. And then the next, and the next, and the next, and house shows, and you know, at hotels when we were staying places and everything. Like, it just, people, it took on a life of its own.
Speaking of which, by the way, I don't want to, I want to make sure I mention this. This is, again, right around the time. Have you ever been to Dragon Con?
No, but I've always seen Xavier Woods go to Dragon Con, and it looks very cool.
So the event itself, of course, is amazing, but they have DCW, right? Dragon Con Wrestling. And mm-hmm. I went to that, and they have like this whole hooligan section. And I was like, this is as good as any WWE show I've been to. Like, this is amazing. These fans are amazing. Like, the hooligans, like, the chants they would lead were, like, hilarious. Like, you know, way better than the what chant or just random shit. Like, really, like, that night shit. Like, I was, like, dying. I was like, this is amazing. That helped bring me back to, like, the love of wrestling and the love of, you know, the fans, because that isn't in any other sport, right? Like, there should be more of it, and maybe some of it's bleeding in, but
it's a little, I noticed it a little bit with and it carried over to us too. And thank you to all of our amazing UK fans, the football fans, soccer fans,
right?
There's chants and everything that they do
right
at a lot of their matches that are very, very popular, a lot of standard chants and stuff like that. But it kind of carried over to wrestling. They brought that. It's not just like, you suck, you suck. Like, right. They would like sing songs and like invent these long chants that were like four sentences long instead of like two words.
Right.
Like, and so that's where I noticed most. It was in our British fans and stuff like that. And I think it carries over from football culture. But I agree. I love it.
Yeah, it's when it happens, it's the best. And sometimes you'll always hear a couple things, like somebody tries to get something started, it doesn't grab, but then it does. And so, yeah, the next thing you know, you're wearing a shirt that says Aiden Day, if I recalled, and Lana Day, yeah. And there was a whole thing, right?
Yeah.
Nola, what day is today? That's right, you sing it loud and proud, ladies and gentlemen, today.
Yet another happy Rusev Day here in the Big Easy. See, Phillips, that's where you're wrong. You're not going to ask me why? In a moment. Glad you didn't.
So coming more to the present, the newspaper or the Wikipedia just says, hey, COVID cuts, right? Like, if that's the case, great. Or if you don't want to say anything else about it, that's great. But I'm just kind of trying to go along the story of your career here. So it was just like, hey, guys, we're doing less and you got to go.
I mean, we weren't, you're really not even given an explanation. I remember seeing because I was doing commentary at the time, actually. I wasn't even wrestling. I was doing commentary for 205 Live. And I remember, I don't remember if it was like an email from TR or something like that. It was like, everybody please check this message. And it was like a State of the Union from Vince McMahon. This is like right, and like immediately after like a couple of state shutdowns happened and things were really like shut down. And it was the old, you know, hey, like this is an unprecedented time. We're going to have to do what we have to do. You know, belts might have to be tightened kind of thing. And I'm like, oh God, here we go. And then all of a sudden I started seeing like texts from people and phone call, and I see things popping up on the internet. And then when that started happening, I knew my number was up. I was just like, you know what? I was on, especially at the time, the show, I was number one, I wasn't wrestling. I was doing commentary, which on a show that they just weren't giving any attention to, 205 Live at the time. So I was like, I knew my number was up. So I was just waiting for that phone call. Actually, I had to call them. I got a text saying, hey, please call the office. So I had to call to get my own release. So that's fun.
And so is it a, we wish you the best and maybe you'll come back one day and like, we don't care who you work for in the meantime, or like, how did that go?
Oh, well, I mean, they certainly can't care who they work for because they got rid of me. So I can go do whatever the hell I want. But no, I had a good relationship there, though. I mean, when I had the phone call and everything, it was, of course, like, look, everyone likes you. Like, there's always an opportunity potentially here. But I also know how they saw me as a performer, kind of. I can kind of tell where I sit priority wise. And so, but no, I mean, the minute you are released, you have a 90-day no compete. So I couldn't sign a contract anywhere else or appear on TV anywhere else for 90 days. But after that, my life is my life. Everything is mine. They own Aiden English, of course, but you know, I could do whatever the hell I want.
When you said you could tell just because you just thought they don't have a current storyline for me, and I mean, the fact that you can announce makes you valuable. Like, okay, now I at least got two possible gigs, right?
That's kind of what I figured because I started doing the announcing as a kind of just on the side. And they were like, hey, you could do both if you want. And I was like, sure. And then the minute I started announcing, they stopped booking me to wrestle. So I was like, okay. And I figure, I'm like, yeah, I added to my hat. I added to my repertoire. And so I thought that would be good. And I thought it would give me more longevity. And you know what? At the end of the day, it will long-term for my career wise. It's already helped me with some other things, but yeah, I thought it would too, but I just knew where the show I was working on sat on the totem pole. I was also one of the newer announcers. A lot of other people had more seniority. So I think it was an excuse to cut a lot of people they meant to cut probably a while.
When you keep seeing these continued cuts, are there any that you're surprised by? Or are you just like, yep, this is kind of their MO and moving on?
Well, so it's one of those things where it's hard. And number one, lots of my friends were on those lists and everything too. So especially given what they did that for right as that pandemic, they let a lot of people go. Then it was more, then this year was more and more and more. It's gotten to the point where it's like, why should I be surprised? Especially because, to be fair, the one thing I will say, this used to be a relatively yearly thing. I remember it was a fan. We would always be like, oh, after WrestleMania, where's the dump? You know, who's getting cut? That used to be a thing. I remember in like the early 2010s, it was pretty regular. And then for whatever reason, like shortly after I signed my contract, like 2012, 2013, 2014, it kind of stopped seeing them. They were amassing talent. And then especially when like things like AEW and stuff started up, they wanted to curtail anybody leaving. So they locked more people in or brought more people in. And so they were just kind of stockpiling a lot of talent. Probably too much. So that's, I'm not advocating the massive cuts when they really didn't need to. They've had incredible financial years despite the pandemic. But it is something that they probably could needed to do for a couple of years just in general.
All right. I definitely want to talk about what you've got going on now and your event that's happening here, but I have to ask you about watching CM Punk and what your thoughts were the other night.
I mean, dude, like, I'm a Chicago kid. Punk's our, you know, Punk is our guy kind of thing, you know, and I love his love for this city because like a lot of people are from places and it's yeah, cool. I'm from Dallas. I'm from LA. I'm from wherever, but like few people wear it on their sleeve the way Punk does. And I love that because I wear it on my sleeve too. Like I don't talk about it because it doesn't really fit my character a lot, but deep down as a person, as a performer, as a competitor and all this stuff, like I got Chicago pride. So I always love seeing that, seeing wrestling in the United Center on TV for the first time since I don't even remember when it was. I think SummerSlam, like 92 or 90, early 90s SummerSlam, I think they did in the United Center. But ever since then, there's been a queue on and off, like live events there, but wrestling on TV, that was the first time. It was just, it was an unreal moment. And just see people's emotion and people's joy, and literally 10 minute hop, skip, and a jump away from my apartment right now. Very, very cool. And I was one of those people who, like, I heard all the rumors, but I'm like, I'm not going to sit here and be like, I will believe it when I see it. I'm a big, especially in wrestling, I believe it when you show up on my TV. And he showed up. And it was very, very cool to see it, to, you know, kind of feel it. And it's good to have him back, man.
As you can tell, I am not the most current wrestling guy, or even the last 20 years. And I watched that video three times of just the entrance, and I dare you to not get goosebumps. I mean,
it's impossible.
I don't know when I've heard a reaction like that. I keep trying to think in my mind, like comparatively speaking, like when an entrance like that in any sport, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I had goosebumps now thinking about it. It's unreal.
Yeah. There's something. He's a special performer, and I love that they jumping him right into working with a really great young talent like Darby Allin. That's going to be such a cool thing. They're going to be back here in Chicago in a couple of weeks and everything like that. It's just going to be, I think it's very good for the brand. I think it's very good for wrestling.
Some are saying we thought it could never be done, right? Is it, could it be maybe the beginning of the end for Vince?
No.
All right. Now, before you tell me more, which I demand to find out more, we never thought Sears would go away. We never thought Best Buy would go away. Like, these are like Best Buy's the wrong
one. Best Buy's still there.
Circuit City.
I just went there the other day.
Sorry. Circuit City. I'm trying to think of institutions. Fucking institutions. Blockbuster Video, right? These were like, we couldn't imagine it, right?
So why isn't it?
I'm not saying even a year. Maybe it's 10, but the beginning of the beginning of the end.
Sure. I mean, like, look, it's one of the, how many beginnings are the beginning of the beginning of the beginning of the beginning of the end? Yeah. Okay. Possibly. If we look back 50 years from now, maybe this will be the little jumping off. I guess I'm thinking in the more like dramatic sense. No. So the one thing, and you're totally right. The only thing I will say about this though, the examples you listed, are victims of a total shift in the way people consume something, whether it's media for things like Blockbuster or stuff like that. We just totally, everything shifted. Wrestling is still wrestling. You know what I mean? We're getting our alternatives now, which is great. And it's going to siphon some things away from Vince and WWE, but like wrestling's still wrestling. And the way people experience wrestling fundamentally shifts as a culture, which I don't really see happening. WWE has a miles and miles and miles head start. But that said, a company like AEW coming along in the short time, it is still a baby company. It really, really is. And they have the advantage of having some good minds behind it and some great funding behind it, which helps. It does matter. Money, you know, money does matter and it talks. And so guys like Tony Khan who love the business and are able to fund something like this, they've made huge steps in just a couple of years. WCW made a couple of huge steps in a couple of years too. So like you have examples like that too with companies that tried to do it and fail. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I'm just going to say it's going to take a lot to pass up WWE. And you know what? It's like one of those things is like, and I don't think that's what they're trying to do. In a sense, of course, everybody wants that market share, but you know what I mean? Like they don't want to do what WWE does, you know, and Tony Khan said a really great thing on Twitter the other day that I actually have a ton of respect for is pro wrestling is an art form. You can't, you know, give everybody a paint by numbers performer or show and expect really great things or whatever. You got to let these artists create. And that's what they're doing. So it's like, if they focus on that, what they do differently and what their performers bring to the table, as opposed to, I love a lot of what WWE does. I was just saying this last night. I'm like, they do a lot of things really, really well. Don't get me wrong. They do spectacle and over the top and everything very, very well. But they do have a bit of a homogenized and kind of like corporate, like paint by numbers approach to a lot of athletes. And I think it's to the detriment of some of those athletes, whereas there is way more freedom in some, not just AEW, but Impact, even places like New Japan, places like AAA, CMLL, MLW, ROH, a lot of these companies that allow that freedom of creation, freedom of expression for their athletes. So keep doing that, letting that side power through, and you're going to keep taking more and more chunks out of that WWE core.
Well, if I remember correctly, when the whole WCW thing even happened, Vince's idea was that it was going to grow because, like, here's all these fans and here's all these fans. When aren't most of them the same fans? And is that different now? Like, right now, it's great to give the big WWE the finger, right? They're like the Yankees. It's great to say a few, and I'm all about AEW. But aren't most people, even if they're cursing Vince, still watching every week and have the network and everything else?
That's an argument I make a lot too. And you know what? And I love that though. And that's what I try to tell people. I'm like, when I see all these people getting in arguments or like I do a Twitch stream and like a lot of people talk, they do that. They give the old finger. They did the worst thing they could ever possibly do. I'll never watch again. I used to hear that all the time when I was with WWE. Like, that's it. I'm done with WWE. They've ruined it for me. And all I can say is like, see you next week kind of thing. And it goes for everybody. I'm like, I've heard people say that about like AEW or like all kinds of stuff. Like, and you know what? Watch it all. And watch it all for different reasons. I love it. There's more wrestling now widely available to people all over the planet than there ever has been in recorded history. And there's no reason you can't enjoy any of it that you want to. You know what I mean? And like, and I think that's the thing that people, yeah, they argue with each other over it. But man, just if you don't like it, don't watch it. You've got 80 million other things to watch in the world of wrestling. So I think there is a lot of crossover. Absolutely. A lot of people watch all of it. And I hope they continue to, because it just means a more robust ecosystem for performers like me.
Do you have a regular Twitch, like a weekly one?
I'm on there 3-4 times a week. Yeah. I'm gaming because I want to, that's one of my side. I want to create a kind of a career outside of wrestling in competitive gaming, not competitive myself. I'm pretty terrible, but I like using my broadcasting skills and doing esports and like, and analyzing that, hosting that, commentary on that. I love that ecosystem. I'm not a baseball fan, man. I'm not a football fan, but you get me watching some Valorant or some Overwatch League action, Call of Duty League. I'm a sucker. I'll sit there for hours.
Is there a product behind you? Is that one of your sponsors?
There's a couple. I mean, this chair is, and these lovely focus supplements from Advanced GG and Respawn Products. Yes.
Just all kinds, pre-workout, all the whole thing.
No. So I've worked with like fit. These are not fitness. These people are endemic.
He's flexing. Audio listeners, he's pretending to flex, sort of.
Yeah. No. So Advanced GG is very much focused on the gaming community. So they have two
supplements. It's brain food?
Basically. And like, I'll tell you this, it actually works. And because I don't work with people where I don't actually believe in their product. And so, yeah, it's got some caffeine in it, but it's got a lot of nootropic stuff that's actually scientifically studied. And they actually pointed me to a study that was done on it at a research right. institute. And I find myself a little bit more locked in. I'll use it for work sometimes when I need to focus on editing a project or typing a long thing or whatever. It really is nice. They have a straight up energy drink too. And they also have a chill supplement, which is CBD based.
That's chill. That's good.
Yeah. And it helps unwind.
Have you ever gotten to a bikini and inflatable pool? I hear that works.
Oh, the hot tub streams. Those were big for a while. I think they kind of peppered out a little bit, but I'm not quite the physique for that. I'm not quite the, I don't know if I have quite the aesthetic for that.
Pale and bald?
Yeah. I mean, I'm in decent shape, but like, plus I don't want to get water on my damn computer. So I wouldn't trust a baby pool in my office to save my life.
Right. You seem to be an appropriate amount of taking a shot at yourself, even though you were in the largest wrestling brand in the world. I'm guessing you don't get recognized a ton, which you probably appreciate. Can I ask you in a given week how many times you might get recognized in the general public?
When I was in the Rusev Day stuff, like it depends on what you're doing, right? The more you're on TV. And then when I was doing that stuff, it was probably wasn't even that bad, probably once a week at home here in Chicago,
right?
Which isn't too bad. Now it's less just because I've been out of the spotlight for a little bit. But every so often when you go to like somewhere where there's like a lot of people, maybe like it's a mall or certain restaurants and stuff like where tourists might show up because people from out of town might recognize you. Right. I got recognized by the FedEx driver the other day, stuff like that. Every so often, once every couple of weeks, something like that around my neighborhood.
Right. Speaking of which, that's another reason why I have such high praise for you guys is, you know, I have been able to go backstage a few times and all of the pros that have interacted with my kids, like took the time to interact with my kids in a very real way. And I know that's something they're doing every day in every fucking city. And it's not easy. And I never felt like it was an act or anything. The only person who didn't was Cena. I'll give Cena a pass because it was the one time and he literally like shook our hand and we took a picture and we got the fuck out of there. And like, that was it. But again, yeah. He's larger than life. He's larger than wrestling. And maybe he's having a bad day. I give anybody a pass on just like, hey, it's the first time I met you. If I meet him again and he shrugs my kids off, then I'll say I'm not a Cena fan. But everybody has done that. And I've always been like, that's that's just like giving a shit in a real way. Cause I've met a lot of celebrities. I've been to, you know, big sporting events and people, you know, think they're bigger than they are. And you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no. And I think that's something to kind of toot the horn of wrestlers for us. I think there is something about wrestlers that like, that keeps us a little, I don't know what the word down to earth is, just cause I think we were all, for many people, we were fans sometimes as little as a year ago. And then, you know, you get a break on TV, like it can be that fast. So I think there's, especially wrestling is such a weird little, like it's a big niche. It's obviously very popular, but like, it's still this kind of, I think a lot of us always feel like, well, we're not real celebrities. Like, right. Like, you know what I mean? Like we're just dudes and girls who do this weird form of acrobatic entertainment. Like, and it's luckily it's gotten kind of successful, but I think there's this feeling of like, you guys want to go see Hugh Jackman and like those guys, right? And so like, I think there's a humility with anybody really like is really happy to see us and all that kind of feeling. It's super, super humbling. And I think we have a really solid appreciation for that.
Right. So let's talk about what you got going on now.
Absolutely.
Lay it on me.
I mean, obviously pandemic year was really tough, really slow for the wrestling business and everything as a whole, but kind of on this slightly brighter side of things, this summer things opened up. I've been given incredible opportunities with Impact Wrestling. I got to debut right after Slammiversary this summer, winning a homecoming king and queen tournament with Deonna Purrazzo, who is a fantastic pro wrestler, current champ of AAA, women's champ, the Reina's champion, as well as the Knockouts champion. So we've been working together a lot. I've been able to do both wrestling and broadcasting for New Japan Pro Wrestling, which is one of those promotions that, like, growing up as a wrestling fan, you hear about New Japan and like that Japanese strong style. And I know obviously met like Shinsuke Nakamura and stuff like that. And you have this kind of like legendary status over there. It's a different, you know, that's where that. They've influenced American wrestling so much with the more athletic style, the hard hitting style. And so I'm like, I'm not cool enough to work there kind of thing. Like that's like hardcore stuff. Like I'll do the entertaining WWE stuff, but to get the opportunity to work them and, you know, work on New Japan Strong and broadcast for New Japan's resurgence and meet people like Tanahashi, meet people like Tomohiro Ishii and stuff like that. There's this little like hardcore wrestling fan in me who's geeking out. So I've had incredible opportunities. And those are continuing to grow. I'm doing more work with both companies, which is awesome. And then Dave Marquez reached out and put together this Championship Wrestling from Atlanta, growing the United Wrestling Network. You know, there's already Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, which many people know. They believe Championship Wrestling from Arizona, as well as Memphis. And now we're going to add Atlanta, which is going to come from Center Stage, which for people who were back in the day, that was a big WCW taping spot. So there's a ton of wrestling history at Center Stage.
I went NXT there actually with my kids.
And I was just about to say NXT went there, which is cool. And I did not get to be a part of that tour in NXT. And I was like, oh, I always wanted to go to Center Stage. That's so like now,
a sweet little venue. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very cool studio, classic studio wrestling style stuff. So I'm very excited. September 2nd, they get the tape. The first round of episodes is being taped. A lot of really great talent coming out of there. And I'm really looking forward to it.
Cool, man. Did you take or make any calls towards any of those folks over at AEW when your contract ran out?
I reached out to AEW on one or two occasions, I don't know Tony Khan personally. I don't know anybody in the office personally, but I have friends who work there, obviously.
Right.
So I reached out kind of through friends and through people I knew, a couple of times, didn't really lead anywhere. I know, they're going after all kinds of people and they're constantly changing their program. So, you know, it didn't go anywhere, no harm, no foul, but you know, I kept up with some friends, stuff at Impact, and that's led to me to where I am now. And honestly, I'm very, very happy with that.
You're still a young man.
Relatively, I'm about to be 34 and I feel like I'm about 54 with these damn hips and knees, but, otherwise I'm feeling pretty good. So yeah, I got some more time on these old bones.